And Kate, can you just say a few things? Say your name. Kate Clinton, social security number.
What?
Oh, you know what? I think I do need to boom you.
Really?
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought so, but.
I'm quite quiet, actually. How's that? Testing 1, 2. Test 1, 2.
Yeah, okay. Well, I can do it. Actually, I think I'm going to move over here. Bring my voice down. Okay. This is KFAI 90.3 FM in Minneapolis and 106.7 FM in St. Paul. And I'm sitting in the studio with Kate Clinton here on a Sunday afternoon. And she has just authored a new book called Don't Get Me Started. Welcome, Kate.
Thank you. Welcome to me.
Yeah.
Happy to be back in the Twin Cities.
Yeah. How often has it been? How long has it been since you've been here?
I think probably about a year, actually.
But yeah, that's right. You were here pruning. See?
You know, I gotta get to Ruby's, get a little snack. It hasn't closed, has it?
No, it's still there.
All right.
Struggling, but still there.
Oh, well, then go to Ruby's for
heaven's
sakes.
Go to Ruby's. That's right. And they're only serving breakfast now.
Oh, the best pancakes.
Well, see?
And they're with you all day.
There you go.
And if you don't eat them, you can just wrap them up in your pocket, roll them up, put them in your pocket, and, you know.
Have a snack later.
Have a little carbo loading later.
Feed the squirrels.
You know,
whatever. So a book. I'm like, you know, I have to say, Kate, I've known you for a long time when you were like doing those little regional music festivals. Mm-hmm. New England was the first one we ever hung out at. And
Church Unitarian Basements.
That's right. So how did you get to a book?
Well, actually, it's where I started, but I could never type. I wanted to write a book. I could never type, and I was the one that always was handing in the manuscripts that had the big holes in them, or, you know, I was like wigged out and white out. So I actually started taking things around and saying them, and that's how I began to perform. So coming back to writing a book is really full circle for me. And how it actually happened was I was at the ABA, the American Booksellers Association, and was performing at the Lambda Literary Awards as the MC, which is a place where I can write very arcane material about books that you can't really do anywhere else. Like, you know, Edmund White's My Beautiful Room's Gone Condo. It doesn't fly in other parts of the country. So I did a lot of very specific book jokes, and someone from Ballantine was there, a salesperson, and went back and said, make her write a book. And that's how it all started.
Wow. So it's published by Ballantine then?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I remember you said something in the book there about whoever encouraged you to write the book, you were going to go back and choke her.
There was a woman from Florida who has moved to Florida and having a lovely life, I'm sure. But there were days that I just thought, I will never finish this. Where is she?
How long did it take you to write it?
Well, when I actually cleared the decks from performing and writing up columns and things, it took about a year. You know, I did do some performing, but not on the schedule that I usually do. It was a concentrated task, and I actually enjoyed it when I got around to doing it. When I look back at what I really didn't like about it was being interrupted all the time and having to switch gears between performing and writing.
How different is it from writing a routine? Because I recognize some elements of your routines in the book, but then there's also other stuff that is not routine at all. So how did you get that balance?
Well, originally I pitched to them that I would do 10 routines that I've done over the years, and I started going backwards and putting the routines together, and then about 1989 I got bored. So I decided that I would use parts of the routine but also write material that was updated, stuff that I was interested in, things that I was thinking about. Sometimes things that was just too personal to do in a show because it was sometimes heavy.
You know, because it was your family.
Yeah. And so the big transition was to make the transition from performing to written word. You have to write the transitions that, in my case, when I'm performing, are just a raised eyebrow or a pause or a spin or whatever. And so I wrote that kind of transitional material, which often became very personal. And then in the editing, it still was overwritten. So then in the editing, I cut back. So we have a cleaner, leaner line.
Cleaner, leaner line. What inspires you? I mean, you were talking in there about how comedians don't get to dedicate jokes.
Mm-hmm.
And where do you find, what does inspire you, though? Who do you want to dedicate your jokes to, or how do you get that material?
I'm the person at dinners who's always writing down what my funny friends say and saying, can I have that? And they're like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So I think, you know, I right from the beginning when I started to perform, I practiced and I would imagine my favorite people that I wanted to amuse sitting on a blue couch, and they never moved. It was so hard to work with that blue couch, but that's where I started. So and people on the couch that I wanted to amuse were people such as Lily Tomlin, Joan Rivers, comedians that I liked, and then also people like Mary Daly, who's not a comedian or a mayor. People think I say Mayor Daly. Adrienne Rich. But women who really have feminist thinkers and lesbian thinkers who really have influenced my work. I think that I once said to Adrienne Rich, you know, I read your stuff and then I try to make it into one line or, you know, a good one-liner. And she said,
she
good. Well, she said, great. You know, the more that know about it, the better. And they're really things that, as feminists, we all think and believe in, but they're things that, you know, people are on the go. They're busy gals and guys, and you just have to give it to them quick.
Something that they can just quickly remember.
Yes, or use later.
Take out, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
So you still call, I noticed that you still call yourself a fumerist.
Yes.
That hasn't changed.
No.
And maybe for those to whom that is a new term, could you say what you mean by that, and how hard is it? How do people respond when you say that?
Well, fumerist is actually a word that was a fortunate foe from typing. I can't type. So feminist and humorist ran together, and I liked the look of it. It looked like fumerist, which is a notion of fuming and maybe bursting into flames and shedding light with the light from those flames on things that we've been told not to make light of, usually things that are really putting women down. So a lot of times I've gotten into, when I first did it in the beginning, a lot of people wanted to interview me because I could say feminist and humorist in the same sentence. And they were like, well, let's meet this little gal. Couldn't be. So it got me in. It was a great gimmick. Not that just saying you were lesbian at that time wasn't a gimmick, but it really got me into places where guys wanted to talk to the little gal who could say she was a feminist and be funny at the same time. Two things which you and I know aren't mutually exclusive.
Right.
I always thought it was when people would say the women's movement has no sense of humor, they really felt left out because we were probably somewhere hysterical and they didn't get the joke, you know, and had
right.
put us down.
Right. Well, do you think it's harder now to say feminist than it is to say humorist? Since there seems to be this, you know, everybody's moaning about how there's no women's liberation movement anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Feminism
mm-hmm.
seems to have, you know,
as if they
packed
really want to hear.
Packed up its bag and disappeared or whatever.
Yeah. As if they want to know. I mean, I'm enjoying the guys on the Sunday morning talk shows who, during the Clinton scandals, were going, you know, where are the feminists now? As if they wanted to know. Poor
really?
Gloria Steinem
right.
writes a column and they slam her. Like, Gloria, don't bother. But it was certainly the F word of the 80s, and I guess it's holding into the 90s. However, I think that there is a generation that is maybe not call themselves feminists, but definitely have very feminist ideas of inclusion and multiculturalism and anti-racist and or at least some kind of discussion of class. All those things were very feminist. And maybe they wouldn't use the word, but they're coming back.
Could you read something for us out of the book?
Well, I just happen to have it right here.
You know,
I'd love
how about
to.
That? Last week, you encourage folks to read it out loud to their friends, and I tried reading it last week on the air, and it was sort of miserable,
oh,
I have to
no.
say. You know, my delivery, I hadn't practiced quite
oh,
enough,
man.
So the delivery was a little off. So maybe, I'm sure you could do
oh, I'd
a
love
swell
to.
Job.
Well, the book, the organizing principle of the book is me. Hello. Kate, and all the words of the chapters are like communicate, educate, my years of teaching, pontificate, all the popes I've known, fornicate, and I...
Yeah, let's not expand
I think,
on that.
Okay, but let me just say there's no lubricate, so it's, for many people, a very painful chapter.
Oh.
But anyway, so the one I'd like to read is rusticate, because we all go to festivals.
Oh, good.
Okay. Rusticate, and the meanings I've cleverly put meanings in here. I've thought of everything.
Yes,
I actually
that was very helpful.
I wanted
I
a little
say.
Button that you could hit, a little microchip in the back that would be a laugh track. But my publisher said that it would drive bookstore people crazy because it could go off.
It was just like talk and talk and talk, and you could never turn it off.
But I said to them, oh, you mean like in a mega store, a book that would draw attention to itself? Yeah, you'd hate to have that.
Yeah, we wouldn't want to have that going on. Geez.
So here's a chapter called Rusticate. One, to attend a women's music festival. Two, 6 degrees of separatism. One afternoon in 1986, while I was writing at my desk in Cazenovia, New York, the phone rang. I absentmindedly picked it up, and a slightly southern accent said what I thought was, Kate, this is Honest Ed. I immediately began to regret not letting the answering machine do its thing, and idly wondered why some used car salesman was calling me, how he'd gotten my number, if he was working his way down through my small town's phone book. Then I heard him say, so I'm doing a new book in the Tales series, and I'm developing a comparison between the all-male Bohemian Grove and an all-women's music festival, and I was wondering if I could just pick your brain a little about some details. If now's not a good time, Armistead, how are you? I'd love to talk. And we roared through an hour of conversation, gossip about other writers, our partners, the closets, politics, our families, and finally, festivals. The first time I met Armistead was after a show at the Great American Music Hall in San Francisco. That night, on stage, before I could hit a punchline, a huge anticipatory laugh exploded out of the dark. After a few times, I felt desperately predictable and started stalling and speeding up to throw the laugher off track. A couple of times, I'd get to the punch a nanosecond ahead of him. The things that made him laugh made me hear my material in new ways. I showed off for him. Linguistically, bodily, gaily. It was a rip-roaring blast. Afterward, in the basement of the hall, Hunter Davis, a performer from South Carolina, brought down two friends to meet me. One was Terry Anderson, an activist, writer, and radical from Atlanta. He had interviewed me once. When he invited Armistead to make an appearance in Atlanta, they fell in love, and Terry moved from Atlanta to San Francisco. He introduced Armistead, and I said, "It was you!" And he hooted with laughter. His Tales of the City had saved me when my mother died in 1984, the night of another show at the Music Hall. I flew home from San Francisco for her funeral. She had not been well, but I was still in shock. The day after the funeral, I had to fly to Seattle to do a show, then to upstate New York to be with my dad. The only way I was able to get through those cross-country flights was by reading a tale out west and a tale back east. Perhaps it was payback time when he called to talk. I was the right person, that's for sure. Whether I liked it or not, festivals were my middle name. I gave him dish from lots of different festivals, and he crafted and contrasted them wittily, perfectly, contrapuntally with the rituals of the all-male Bohemian Grove in Northern California. Immediately after we spoke, I panicked that when his new tale came out, my separatist sisters would purple-list me from all festivals in perpetuity. The book came out, and came and went, and no one ever said anything to me about it. I'm still disappointed.
Which book was it?
I think it was the one where the two women have twins, and then it ends rather faithfully with the Jim Jones thing. After performing at the Southern Women's Music and Comedy Festival three times, the West Coast Women's Music and Comedy Festival three times, the New England Women's Music Retreat three times, and the Michigan Women's Music Festival 104 times, I purple-listed myself from festivals. Although I did perform at the National Women's Music Festival in Bloomington, Indiana, it is not on my list of festivals to girlcott, because actual buildings with theaters, rooms with beds, indoor plumbing, and dining areas with hot food and beverages are involved. Smaller outdoor gatherings, however, are included. Women's Harvest in the fall in upstate New York was my very first festival. It always conjures up a vision of pulling up women out of the ground by a hank of their hair like organic carrots. The Poconos Women's Weekend in Pennsylvania was for years produced by a nutty collective of women from Philadelphia, many of whom no longer speak to one another. The Poconos, all nooks and hollers, twists and turns, were hell. Whenever I asked for directions, I rolled down the window, watched the guy's lips move, then pulled out and asked, "Did you get that?" My manager and I were lost for hours once. At last we found the place. We pulled in, but were immediately disoriented by the smell of steaks and barbecued chicken. We knew we were in the right place, however, when we saw a huge, naked sumo woman sliding down a turquoise water slide into the pool. Despite smaller regional festivals, my dad has an arid piece of scrubland, let's have a festival, and the popularity of cruises for wealthy aqua separatists, the mother of all festivals, Michigan, goes on. Although it's been in operation for 20 years, no one is able to give clear directions. Signage is a problem, since organizers know it's like advertising, hey, you big angry guy with the gun. Yeah, you, over here. In January, when I was invited to the 20th Michigan Festival, it seemed like a good idea. But on an unrelenting hot day in August, driving miles of unmarked roads through tufted fields of asparagus fern, it seemed a hideous idea. Hopelessly lost, but making good time, we flagged down an old Buick barreling down the dirt road. The guy driving slowed his car, and I thought, this is how people die. He smiled warily. I gave the international sign to roll down your window. Hi, thanks for stopping. Can you tell me the way to the... And I wanted to say festival, but the F-stop kept my teeth stuck to my bottom lip. What if he killed me for being a lesbian? What if? Then I realized he was being wary, because maybe he thought I was, despite my hair, a tourist from the Pacific Northwest where most straight women look like lesbians, and he didn't want to presume or insult me. Or maybe he thought I was a lesbian and I would kill him. The pause lasted forever. Dust settled, gritted my lip. I spat out, festival. We both said it at the same time. He nodded wildly and pointed in the direction I'd just come from, gave a few more instructions, gave the accursed, can't miss it, and drove off. The logistics, parking, food, sanitation, entertainment, sleeping spaces, all things second nature to Hilton or Embassy Suites, make the festival harder just for the fun of it. The bivouacking babes who make it all happen make Storm and Norman and his troop look like pampered slackers. Security and crowd management attract women with control issues and an unnatural fondness for two-way radios. They dispatched us back and forth between gates A and B with crackled communiques. As we drove between each gate, we saw a wood nymphish woman in tie-dye diaphanous all-natural cottons, flower in her hair, dancing a Jules Pfeiffer homage to Mother Nature. Or she was on acid. We stopped. She said she needed a ride to gate B. I wasn't sure what gate we were headed for by then, but I said, get in, there's room. Just barely. The object of the Michigan Festival is to pick up other women who are completely out of the way, saying, no problem. By the time you arrive at the festival gates, you hate your passengers with a blind, murderous resentment. We'd already gone out of our way a mere 10 hours to pick up a friend of mine in Chicago. She was a masseuse and brought her massive padded pink massage board in case she wanted to pick up some spare change. The festival is like an underground Russian economy after the fall of communism, with bartering services and a black market and animal products. The van was packed. As we were bouncing along, my friend said to the wood nymph we just picked up, I'm Donna. What's your name? Feather Mountain Grace. Hey, Feth, where are you from? The cosmos. Really? Me too. What part of Chicago?
Yes, only the women's music festivals can be. Uh-huh. So I take it you're not doing many of them these days.
Not unless they involve a lot of canvas. No.
A lot of canvas. I see. So where are you performing then? Are you performing now? Or I mean, with the tour, I assume.
Yes, I actually.
The book is on tour.
The book is on tour, and during the month formerly known as June, now known as Gay Pride Month.
That's right.
I'll be doing a lot of Gay Pride, Grand mm-hmm. Marshally kind of experiences. And I also will be doing gigs in separate different cities, but I'll be back to a lot of places in the fall promoting the CD.
Mm.
And
the CD is? Might as well say it while you got it here.
I might as well. The CD's called Comedy You Can Dance To, which I think is a lovely.
Is it all, it's all new routines?
Yes. Yes, it's all the material.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you're going to be at the American Booksellers Association this weekend that we're just, when people hear this interview.
Yes.
We will have been there, done that,
we'll be
basically.
Defying time. Yes. I'll be performing and emceeing the Lambda Literary Award dinner, which mm-hmm. is a wonderful time to honor the fabulous writers that we have in our gay and lesbian community.
And when you're not doing book tours, you're doing... universities or
actually still conferences and conventions and just big performance.
Keeps you busy?
Halls. Yes. Yep.
That's
and I'm
great.
Writing a column for The Advocate, writing a column for The Progressive, and just a sort of odd freelance things. I just wrote a column for George magazine about
wow.
if women take Viagra, what would the world be like?
So we are just getting more into that writing thing.
Yes, yes.
Instead
and still, no, but not instead of performing. I still love to perform. I don't quite humbly ever think I've been better.
Do you find the traveling hard?
Circling Atlanta for a couple of hours can be wearing.
Yes.
Which makes the performance really that much more fun. I figure by the time I get to the stage, it's like, well, gee, if you work so hard
material.
To get here, you might as well have some fun.
Yeah, that's great. And you're going to be on Rosie O'Donnell's show?
Mm-hmm. June 1st. Up. Monday morning. Well, it's I don't know, in New York it'll be taped at 10, and I'll be back with Rosie. And
of course, I want the dish now. I've heard that you were writing. The last time I saw you,
uh-huh.
actually, you told me you were writing for her show. And then
yes.
I was watching the credits, and a couple
oh,
times
yeah.
I saw, and
mm-hmm.
then you were gone.
What? Actually, because I have this darn book deal. I mean, wonderfully enough, Ballantine had given me a lovely advance, and, you know, they wanted the book.
That's great.
And I really thought that I could do both. I thought mm-hmm. I could write on the Rosie show and... I don't know, go home. Because they said, you know, you'll be done by 2 every day. Fat chance.
Yeah,
TV's
right.
like 14 hours a day. Especially if you're, like, Rosie is doing a weekly variety show on a
right.
daily basis. So,
how was it writing for somebody else?
Well, it was wonderful once I got her kind of gig. But once I got her gig, she would come in the morning and say, no, before, you know, she's so cute, funny. She's so funny. She's just funny. She'd come in, she'd go, before you tell me the jokes, I just have to tell you what happened last night. And she'd tell us, it'd be hysterical, and we'd say, oh, do that.
Yeah.
And she would say that. And we'd walk out and go, oh, my God, we've
and
done it
paying
again.
Paying me for this? What an easy job.
Yeah, but I think what's actually happened now is a lot of the people who were writing routines are now more comedy segment producers. Mm. They're people mm-hmm. that design the stuff she does in the audience or, mm. you know, like, Rosie, let's have a whole audience of people who look like you,
yeah.
that kind of thing.
Uh-huh. Well, so let's go back to the book. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Clearly from that part that you read, there's, you know, a little bit of seriousness. There's
mm-hmm.
a little bit of experience. There's a lot about, you know, lesbian community experience in
mm-hmm.
general. And you mentioned a little bit about the different chapters. What else does the book cover? I mean, I know you talk about your family a little bit at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. There are things about my sisters and nieces and nephews throughout. There is a lot about politics, which was I do a lot of political stuff in my routine. It was an interesting thing to try to choose because my editors kept saying, you know, people don't remember.
Uh-huh.
There's a very short attention span.
Right.
But I really disagree. I think we have very long memories.
For some things,
for
I'm
some
sure.
For some things. I can't remember my brother's names, but, you know, I know John Poindexter pretty well. But so the chapter on politics, I was really happy to write because it really gave me a kind of overview of the political scene that I've been involved in. And when I started performing, Reagan was just beginning to perform. So it was 8 years of Reagan, 4 years of Bush, and now
yeah.
we're into 6 years of Clinton.
Of whatever affair he's on now, pretty much what that is.
and
do you get mistaken for his sister regularly?
Yes, I do. And I work it a lot, too.
And you look so much alike.
I do. I know. Yeah. And I actually have a brother named Bill, so.
Oh, even better.
He works it completely. But, you know, I think as odd as these sex scandal times are, it's really quite good for gay people.
Mm.
Because it shows that the American people actually could care less what sexual performance a person has as if they're happy with the job they're doing, which is what gay people have been saying for
mm-hmm.
a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we just need to point that out.
Right.
I, quite frankly, am very worried about straight people. I don't think it's going well for them.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So what do you think are the... This is the Lesbian Power Authority,
mm-hmm.
after all.
Mm-hmm.
And you are Kate Clinton,
mm-hmm.
after all. And what do you think are pressing issues for lesbians these days? How have you feel that the community has either responded to your humor differently, or do they, or what do you think is really important for our communities right now?
I think one of the things that's very important is that we certainly rejoice that we had Ellen DeGeneres, a lesbian, coming out on television and coming out in her life. I think it's really helped a number of people, and that we have lesbian characters in either second or third position on a sitcom roster. But I think the danger is that then we think, you know, that going to a WNBA game is a political act, or going to the Lilith Fair is where you get your politics. And you certainly can, but there is work to be done. And I think that a lot of times we might sort of believe our press entirely too much and not dig in and do the hard work of you know, working on the many, many committees that are available in lesbian and gay communities. And, this, you know, and especially lesbian, I have entirely too many friends who are affected by breast cancer. And, you know, that kind of work needs to be done, and we need to be out just doing our own kind of ACT-UP work, because, you know, we have, in a couple, we have twice the possibility of getting breast cancer. So, I mean, I think work like that really needs to be done. And work like being an open lesbian. I think all the women who are having children, lesbians who are having children, who now these children are going to be going to school, I have an absolute responsibility to be out and involved in their school system. I don't like hearing that my friends are going, oh, I love Sally so much, I'm going to put her in a private school. I don't want to hear that. I want people involved in public school education. Right. I think that's one way that things are going to change.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you
for coming
in and talking to us this afternoon.
It's very bright here for an evening. Oh, it's late, you know.
Yeah. So. And this is Kate Clinton, and the book is Don't Get Me Started, and you will be on Rosie's show on June 1st.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, check your local listings for that. And I have a new CD coming out in when?
I think probably the end of, well, they said end of June, but I would say end of the summer.
Who's putting it out?
Uproar Records.
Oh, cool. Mm-hmm. Is that your own label, or is that somebody else?
No, it's a different label. This is actually the first time we've used them.
Great. Mm-hmm. And the new CD is going to be called Comedy You Can Dance To. I can't wait. Does that mean it's got music on it?
There's some singing.
You're singing and talking in rhythm and all of that.
White girl rapping. Is that scary or
I think Alex Dobkin tried that.
She's much better.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.